intentionally put this link the conflicts in order to go nowhere in talks. And that's exactly what we're going to see. We are seeing, and we will continue to see.
During the course of our day, we're going to have reports from all parts of the Middle East. And also, Edmund Fitton Brown will join us and give us a commentary on how it's being viewed from the United Nations point of view and from European point of view. I want to emphasize, Bill, that last night the headlines were so competitive and they were being remade so much. It was a Sunday night, early Sunday, Monday morning in Europe, that there was simply no way that they could have helped each other. The headline writers. The hesitation always had to do with the fact that it appeared, as you've just said, that Iran was suddenly demanding linkage to Lebanon. That had been evident from their remarks for weeks, but because it hadn't been emphasized, we could presume that the meeting in Switzerland took into account that Lebanon was not linked. But then all of a sudden we get a headline saying Iran has walked out of the talks because of the Israeli conduct in Lebanon. And then we had exchanges of fire. It became so cynical. You could say ceasefire means reloading. Every ceasefire, bang, ceasefire, bang. And I believe there's no change. I don't see any change out of Lebanon. The IDF is committed to maintaining its positions in Lebanon. Do you see differently?
I don't see any differently, John. You're absolutely correct. And, you know, I've grown nauseous of the term ceasefire. It's ceaseless fire. It's all we're seeing. The IDF is not going to surrender its positions in Lebanon without Hezbollah stop attacking it, and Hezbollah will not stop attacking the IDF or the Israeli people until Israel ceases to exist. So, I mean, you know, if you think you're going to get a ceasefire there, good luck with that.
Bill, we're very lucky to welcome the ambassador, former ambassador from Pakistan to the United States, now a senior fellow at the Hudson Institute, and our good colleague, Hussein Haqqani. Hussein, we never needed you more than right now because you are a senior diplomat. You understand the language of diplomacy. We're totally lost in whether the conversations in Switzerland have any bearing whatsoever on the exchange of fire in Lebanon or the closing or opening of the Straits of Hormuz. You can claim both are now pertinent. A good day to you, Hussein. We'll record in just a moment, but I welcome your first thoughts about this contradictory atmosphere between the United States and Iran. Good day, Mr. Ambassador.
Good day. Look, the only reason why we all get confused is because we have a leadership that chooses to confuse us. They told us they were going to have a decisive victory over Iran. It would all be over in a week. Then it would all be over in 2 weeks. Then it would all be over in 3 weeks. Simple thing is that war is not a game in which whoever throws the most bombs wins. And that applies to both Israel and America right now, who do have the capability of throwing more bombs. The other side, just by not surrendering, just by refusing to admit defeat, continues to put up a fight. And therefore, the reason why we are in this situation is because we don't have an end game. The United States did not have an end game planned. And as far as Israel is concerned, Israel's been fighting its neighbors for a long time. We were told at one time that Israel's objective was to persuade its neighbors to accept it. But when certain neighbors are willing to accept, the current leadership of Israel takes a maximalist position, saying we want nobody, not a single group, not a single individual, not a single country having any anti-Israeli positions. They were not fighting Hezbollah before they started this war against Iran. Hezbollah was quiet. That was a quiet front. The only front that was active was Gaza. October 7, 2023 happened. in Gaza, not in Lebanon. So when you decide that you're going to try and find a quote-unquote final solution to a problem, you never find a final solution to a problem. And that is something we all need to understand. That is why the confusion is there. Quite clearly, President Trump wants a negotiated settlement. He probably needs it politically. And the Iranians who have survived what was promised to be a war of total elimination. Remember, I'm going to destroy 5,000 years of civilization tonight. Well, hasn't happened. And so therefore, the other side is becoming more and more and more intransigent and more difficult in negotiation.
Now that I can Bill, I want to start recording because the ambassador just gave us permission to be as confused as we are. So that's a good thing.
John, if I may, though, Hezbollah attacked Israel immediately after October 7th. So
absolutely,
Israel did not
absolutely.
Want that plus. That's when
absolutely.
The fight began.
No. But look, yeah, but that was a fight that should have been kept separate.
Gentlemen, I need to
the
start.
The Americans conceded that Lebanon would be a subject of discussion, and that's something that America and the Israelis should have worked out between themselves and have not been able to.
Bill, we've got to correct your mic, your room noise. You're not on mic.
All right, let me give this a go. Any better, John?
Not yet.
Let me check my mic here. Sorry about this.
Sure. Should have checked. I didn't have time, and we weren't recording, so we have time.
It's usually just the settings.
Mr. Ambassador, your mic is perfect, so I could correct Bill. How's it look, Bill? Give me a count.
Hold on 1 sec. I didn't get – it's not pulling up my settings here.
Sure. We're good. I'm going to divide. We have two parts. I'm going to divide the diplomacy first and then turn to the role that Pakistan and Qatar are playing, Mr. Ambassador, which is fascinating. I believe the Prime Minister of Pakistan is present at the talks in Switzerland.
Mm-hmm.
And
This
is all a development that needs explication. Pakistan, the new arbiter, the new Switzerland. Or something that significant. How you doing, Bill?
Is this any better? Sound any better?
Better. It's not room noisy, but it's not you on mic.
All right. Let me see if I can get my – try this. See if I can go with my mic. All right. Is that any better, John?
It's getting better. It's not you on mic all the way it can be, but it's better than it was. There's not the same room echo. If you can't fix it, Bill, I'll go with what we've got.
Okay. How does this sound? Does it sound any better?
Hardly any change.
Wow.
But there's no room noise, and that's a good thing.
Okay.
So right.
Yeah, I'm not sure what's going on here, John. Any better here?
It's not, you're not changing it materially.
Okay. Yeah, I can't explain this. It's the same setup I've been using.
It's almost like the situation in the war, Bill. It's nothing's changing materially.
Yeah, I've adopted diplomatic language to describe technology. Yes. We're making progress, Bill. We're making progress.
Absolutely. It's 24 hours away.
2 weeks. 2 weeks. That's the New York standard. Bill, how close can you get to the mic?
I'm using my actual microphone for recording, so I'm not sure what's going on.
If that's a microphone, Bill, the microphone's not on.
Yeah, it's showing on. It's showing on in your
ear. How about your levels?
Just jack. I could put it up all the way. How's that?
No change. Something's not clicking. Are you plugged in?
Do you want me to sign out and sign back in? Yeah, it's plugged in because you're hearing me, and I'm showing it on this mic.
I don't know what to do, Bill. You go off and come
back. I think it may be worthwhile, just logging off and logging in.
Go right off.
Want me to do that?
Yeah, and come back, and we'll record when you come back.
Be right back.
Thank you. Hussein, the confusion for me over the weekend was the London headlines would be at odds with the Washington headlines. And I've the Washington headlines had to be laden with election talk. You couldn't tell. You can't tell, though, because everybody's different. The Washington Post, the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal. But so I've come to trust the London headlines. And that's the only thing that I have. I know it's not absolute, but it's something, unless you tell me the London headlines read distorted to you. How do they read? Are you there, Hussein? Have I lost Hussein as well? Let me see where everybody is. Bill's back.
Does this sound any better?
Yes, it does.
Yeah, I don't think it picked up the mic change.
You're over-modulating now. You can back off a little bit. And I've lost Hussein.
Okay, let's see if it's better.
Okay, you're back as well. Bill, let me hear your voice.
Can't hear a word.
Bill, now you've now gone silent.
I can't hear you either now, all right, John. What's happening.
Let me hear the count, Bill.
10, 9, 8.
Now
seven,
you're
six.
On mic. Whatever you did it well, yeah. Mr. Raggio.
Yeah, but it wasn't picking up the mic when I plugged it in, and
yeah,
it, we needed.
I get it. It's fine. Hussein, how do you hear him?
I don't think he's hearing us.
Let me see why. Why is that? Why did he go away?
This is the making of the John Batchel Show.
Yeah, right. All right. All right. Wait, I've got him. I've got him. Now you're back.
He's logging back. He just logged off. He's coming back.
All right. You're back now, Hussein. Do you hear me? I see you. Why don't we see him? I mean, we see him. Well, he's gone now. He'll be back. This is evidence of Bill, and when things go wrong, everything goes wrong.
Yeah, didn't start well for us, did it?
No, it didn't.
I think there's something going on with the system. I'm going to let Sam know we'll just be running a couple minutes late.
Yeah, thanks. All right, he's coming back. Let's see if we get him.
I'm here.
All right,
can you
Bill,
hear me?
Bill, we're set, okay?
Oh, God. Okay, finally all three in harmony.
All right, here we go. I won't make an unnecessary reference to Stooges, okay, guys? We'll stay away from that. Here we go.
Only if I could be Mo.
I'm going to go with the Wall Street Journal headline because it's got a dependent clause that requires explication. All right, there it is. 5, 4. First part, the diplomacy in Switzerland. Second part, Pakistan and Qatar's role here as mediators, arbiters, referees, judges, all of the above. 5, 4, 3. The making of the John Batchelor Show about to become the thing itself. I'm John Batchelor. I welcome the opportunity to talk to my good colleagues, Bill Raggio, the Foundation for the Defense of Democracy, and Hussein Haqqani, former ambassador from Pakistan to the United States, now a senior fellow at the Hudson Institute, about the competing headlines for these last 72 hours to do with the Strait of Hormuz, with the suspect nuclear weapons program, with the war between Washington and Iran, the contest between Washington and Jerusalem, and what appears to be on-again, off-again attacks in Lebanon that are leading to casualties. For example, I have a headline from the Wall Street Journal to begin the week. Iran mediators offer plan to ease Lebanon-Hormuz tensions. Subhead, Trump's threats had created friction at the peace talks, which were complicated by fighting between Israel and Hezbollah in Lebanon. I go to the Financial Times to hope to find clarity because the FT has been remaking its headlines for the last 48 hours, and I find it comes down to simply U.S. and Iran make progress, that's in quotes, in talks. Mr. Ambassador, I won't press the case. I'm coming to you because you're a senior diplomat and you can help me understand. When they use the word progress, is that a good thing or is that just giving me something to quote? Good evening to you.
Good evening. When they say they're making progress, what they mean is that both sides are still willing to continue talking. And that's exactly where we stand. The United States has not been able to achieve its original war aims of regime change or of bringing Iran on its knees. Remember, there was a time when President Trump used to talk about it's the last opportunity for the Iranians to do something about their regime. Then it was, I am waiting for them to come out with a white flag and surrender. All of those things were said. His Middle East envoy, Steve Witkoff, at one point said, I cannot understand why the Iranians are not capitulating after what we've done to them. So obviously, in the process, the global economy has become a hostage, and now President Trump says he doesn't want to become Herbert Hoover, the guy who brings in a depression. So his considerations are economic. Iran has proved that it can actually survive such a huge attack. Maybe the attack wasn't as huge as it was claimed to have been, because obviously they survived sufficiently to continue to negotiate in a rather tough manner. As far as Pakistan and Qatar are concerned, their role is primarily passing messages, making sure that both sides continue to remain engaged with fine tweaks to the wordings of their agreements. If you read the memorandum of understanding, it's actually, as Mike Pence said yesterday, a plan to make a plan, to have a plan for the purposes of finalizing a plan for some kind of unnegotiated arrangement.
Bill, a very good day to you. Can you characterize where we were when we ended last week, thinking that the memo of understanding was going to lead to a stand down of the military, the kinetic forces? Right now, I presume that they're not standing down, although I do not know the status of the U.S. Navy in the Strait of Hormuz. Are we at war with Iran? That's a simple question, Bill. But boy, it must have a complicated answer. Good day to you, Bill.
Good day, John. And, you know, I'm going to, you know, first, I never had any confidence that there'd be any progress in the talks, because Iran did what everyone knew shouldn't have happened, which was link the Israel-Hezbollah conflict to the U.S.-Iran deal. And that is a clever way for the Iranians to delay talks, to do exactly what they've done. I want to read a quote from President Trump, what he made immediately after this memorandum of understanding was put out, because this tells you that the administration knew that it had to stop and that basically the Iranians had them. And here's what President Trump said last week, quote, if we didn't do this deal, we could have dropped more bombs for another 3, 2, 4 weeks, 2 years. You would never have the Hormuz Strait open again. He admitted that the military operation, at least as designed, was not going to make it happen, was not going to reopen the strait, short of a U.S. occupation of the coastal areas and beyond of Iran. You could not ensure that the Strait of Hormuz would be open. And you don't just need military force at that choke point. You need it up and down the coast, because that Gulf, the Iranians can strike not just at the strait, but throughout the length of the Persian Gulf or the Arabian Gulf or whatever you want. So the Iranians know that the U.S. don't have the will. I would argue we have the capability to do it. We don't have the will to do it. And I'm not saying we should occupy southern Iran, but it just shows the problems that existed from this from the very beginning. They were not prepared for a long conflict. They were not prepared to keep the Strait of Hormuz open. They were not prepared to do what needed to be done to keep the Strait of Hormuz open. And this is why we are where we are. And the Iranians really hold the cards here. President Trump said it. And they could walk away from the deal knowing that the U.S. doesn't have the will to reopen the Strait of Hormuz.
And there were presumptions that have been proved wrong, actually. Basically, the war was based on presumptions that were wrong. A week or two of bombing will lead to regime change. Wrong presumption. Iran will not close the Strait of Hormuz. Wrong presumption. Iran will not be able to maintain the closure of the Strait of Hormuz once the U.S. imposes a blockade on Iran. Wrong presumption. And Iran would be desperate to accept a negotiated settlement. Again, a wrong presumption.
Mr. Ambassador, I'm puzzling. The word threats was used by the Wall Street Journal to characterize the President of the United States' remarks these last hours. What do the threats do to the presumption of a negotiation? And there's another presumption. Do the threats make it more difficult, less difficult? Is the threat considered a useful tool? I'm puzzled because in my experience of reading history, threats are not strength.
Threats are only useful if people believe that they will be carried out. Somebody who routinely threatens anybody who says something about the new reflecting pool in front of the Lincoln Memorial to Iran, if somebody uses threats too frequently, their threats become ineffective. Point number one. Point number two, they become an excuse for somebody who is negotiating and wants to drag out the negotiations, which is what I think the Iranians have wanted to do from day one. So they keep saying, well, we can't have talks right now because you're doing this. We can't have talks now because you're threatening. We can't have talks right now because your ally Israel is doing X, Y, Z. And the president is just putting out all these fires. Look, I think the Iranians actually scored a point when, after an announcement that Vice President Vance will not travel to Switzerland, he did travel to Switzerland. So that kind of conveys that it's the American side right now that is more keen on maintaining the appearance of the negotiated process going forward, because they do not want to go back into war mode, partly because perhaps they do not have the kind of military assets in the area that are required for the ground operation, the occupation of the coastal areas, et cetera, which Bill said might be necessary for fulfilling the war objectives. Look, you set the war objectives, you bring all the force necessary to meet the war objectives, and then you find the words that describe what you are planning to do to convey it to the international community. What we are facing is a presidency that lives by words, not by plans.
Bill, I want to go back more than 20 years to when it first became evident that Iran was contributing to the destruction of the American ambitions in Iraq. There we were as a garrison army claiming to be helping the Iraqis transfer their future into democracy. And I believe that's when we first learned about the IEDs and the VBIEDs and the enhancement by the Iranian weapons makers, all of that. And I recall there being remarks made by Washington at the time, but it's unclear to me whether we threatened Iran if it didn't stop, whether we made anything that looked like a credible action against the Iranian regime for interfering. Did we leave them out of the conversation that far back, Bill?
There was some mention within the military. General Petraeus, remember, he issued a briefing in 2007 talking about the Mahdi Army special groups and how they were supported by Iran. You had Admiral Mullen talking about it, who was the Chairman Joint Chiefs of Staff at the time. But there was no real – that was coming from the military and intelligence side. The politically, the U.S. government did not want to directly confront Iran. So it was treated as a localized problem within Iran. And we refused to target the safe havens where the Iranian-backed Iraqi militias were operating from within Iran. So if you remember, I believe it was 2006, there was an attack on a provincial center in Karbala. Five American soldiers were kidnapped. They were being driven across the border into Iran, but they were executed because security forces, Iraqi and U.S. security forces, were closing in. This operation was plotted inside. We have satellite imagery showing the mock-up inside of Iran. And what we chose to do was battle the militias on the Iranian terms inside of Iraq instead of taking the fight and punishing the Iranians for their support. A lot of questions whether that should be done or not, but
That's how the U.S. acted. They treated it as an internalized, localized problem inside of Iraq and not dealt with it as a problem of Iranian interference and punished the Iranian regime in other ways.
Excellent memory.
John, if I may say something, I think what has happened is that America's adversaries, especially its asymmetric adversaries, have understood that there is a growing decline of American public's will to fight in the Middle East. And that awareness enables them to make plans against which the United States has no effective plans.
Will wins wars, and we don't have the will to win them. We have we can maintain them. Iraq, Afghanistan, Somalia, but we don't have the will to win them. And asymmetric enemies, they prey.
And the American public is not convinced that these wars are in its interest, and the leaders are unable to convince them. And very frankly, if we did a show exclusively devoted to messaging and understanding, what has been the messaging over the last several months? And nothing that will convince a skeptic to become understand that this war may actually be necessary. So when you present to people every war as a war of choice, hey, we are a country protected by two oceans. There's no threat to us. Yes, we had a terrorist attack on 9/11, but since then we have actually started identifying terrorists everywhere, and we can eliminate anybody who's about to pose a threat to us at in the homeland. Then people say, so then what's the big deal? You know, a couple of people here, a couple of people there getting kidnapped or shot at. That's only because we are there. Maybe if we are not there, that won't happen either. And so the whole debate inside the United States has become one in which generating support for war efforts, has become very difficult.
Ambassador, one more thing, John, I'm sorry, but Hussein outlined one of the two key pillars of our failures in the war on terror. The first one, which he explained expertly, which is a failure to communicate. And the second is a failure to understand the nature and goals of our enemy and what motivates them. We're watching both of these in play in Iran right now.
Gentlemen, when we come back, your remarks are welcome. Bill Raggio, Hussein Haqqani, I'm John Batchelor. I'm John Batchelor with Ambassador Hussein Haqqani, Senior Fellow for Hudson Institute, and Bill Raggio, a Senior Fellow for the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. He keeps a long war journal. I want to find a positive in the present news, which is extremely unsatisfactory because it's fog of diplomacy. And the positive is Pakistan is understood as a referee, a judge, an arbiter, a mediator, an interlocutor. Mr. Ambassador, I can't ignore this fact. What doesn't belong and why is Pakistan, that's been in the conflict from the U.S. point of view for decades, and yet here they are operating as an important mediator between these warring parties. Is that a good thing, or is there reason to distrust this presence?
Well, the question about trust is a more complicated one to answer, so I am diplomatically going to avoid answering it. But let me just say that, you know, in a lot of gangster movies, every now and then there is one guy who leads one gang and everybody finally goes to him to say, oh, well, we are fighting each other, why don't you come and solve this? And that's exactly the kind of situation we are seeing here. Vice President Vance says, I have two very important people in my life, one from India, one from Pakistan. The one from India is my wife. And the one from Pakistan is Pakistan's military leader, Field Marshal Asim Munir. Basically, Pakistan's real role here has been that the moment the Trump administration realized after the first 2 weeks of war that it needed an exit ramp, Pakistan ended up providing that exit ramp by persuading the Iranians that there can be talks. Remember, at that time, the Iranians had a new leader whom nobody had seen, who hadn't come in public, and the only country with some access within Iran's power structure, especially the IRGC, that also had a functioning relationship with the United States at that moment was Pakistan. I'm not too sure what Pakistan gains long-term out of this, except, you know, positive headlines right now. And I'm also not sure what Pakistan brings to this process other than positive headlines. But look, we live in a Twitter presidency, a Truth Social presidency, and Pakistan helps the president and his vice president say good things about what good things they are doing. And so, and it also helps the Iranians say, hey, we are talking to the Americans because a Muslim brother who's next door to us is asking us to do that. Qatar, on the other hand, does bring some equities. It has had influence over Hamas. It has had relations with Iran. It has lots of money that it can actually promise Iran as part of any as part of incentives for making any concessions. And so now the Pakistan-Qatar combine is the one that is trying to move the ball forward. But in the end, it's not they who are doing it. It's President Trump and his team who need it to be done, and they are the ones who are volunteering to do it.
Again, we turn to the word progress. What does it mean? I'm Hussein Haqqani, Bill Raggio. I'm John Batchelor. Thank you, gentlemen. We got it done, 1740. Thank you, Mr. Ambassador. I'm very
I very hope, Bill, that the last answer was reasonable and satisfactory.
All I would say is you forgot Qatar and the Taliban. But
oh God,
it just further reinforces your point. Right.
Yeah. But the point is exactly, it reminds me of one of those grand councils in some gangster movie where everybody's getting together and they all say, okay, Mr. Capone, can you help solve the fights and the problems between the Cincinnati and the Cleveland gangs and the Chicago gangs and the New York gangs? I mean, come on.
It's absolutely correct. Hussein, the radio listeners can't, just when you're talking, can't see me bobbing my head like a bobblehead. So I'm
Thank you very much.
Mr. Ambassador, I hope you can be with us next Monday because your contribution.
I hope so. I hope so too. My health is back. I had a couple of tough weeks, but I'm okay. Wonderful. The desert doesn't help with asthma because there's too many dust particles in the air in these months. And so,
well,
anyway,
I'll look for you because we need help interpreting it, diplomacy.
That's not, you have been missed.
Thank you.
I know. I've missed you. All the best. Thank you.
Bill, we're going to turn to Hamas. I've sent to Sam.
You got it. Yeah, I was just sending. I was going to ask you if you sent it.
And your mic is now perfect, Raja.
Yeah. You know what? I'll run this mic setup when we do it down here, and because it records well.
It felt like it just needed to be plugged in. That was and it was.
Well, usually I use the MacBook mic. Right. I usually just use the default MacBook mic and audio because you say it always sounds fine. But something wasn't working this morning. So I went with the physical mic. And yeah.
All right. I'm
so glad Hussein is back. Worrying about his health, but he.
Well, we're not diplomats, Bill. We don't.
We understand. Need that. Him and Edmund give us that insight on the diplomatic side that I am. It's really opaque to me.
All wars end with the diplomats, and it's very hard to go from. I think Ben, Sam's here.
Got him?
I think so. Nope, not yet. Not Sam. I got to him.
I apologize if Hussein and I kind of.
Bill, it's fine. Given the troubles that I had getting on air this morning. You guys are welcome. I can hear you talking.
No, I know. We had a little back and forth there, but it was a great conversation. I just wanted to touch, he touched on one of the two key elements.
Hard to hear the threats as diplomacy. It's hard to hear it that way. Yeah. But I look upon it as trash talking from the dugout.
Yeah. I mean, and he's perfectly 100% correct. I said this numerous times, I know I've started tuning out the threats that he's made to Iran. You think the Iranians aren't? They're just looking at this, especially with that quote that I read you, right? How do the Iranians read anything other than he doesn't want to fight this out? And so what is their motivation?
Sam's arrived.
All right.
All right. Mr. Benner, a very good day to you. Thank you for joining us. We've been a little hectic this morning, Sam, so thanks for joining.
Yeah, no problem. Happy to be on.
I need you to move a little closer to the mic and give me a count of five.
They're AirPods. Yeah. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
All right. What's the wall behind you? What does it look like?
It's white.
Yeah, I know. Is it a plain surface? Plain surface?
No. There's text above. My roommate put something. I'll just show you guys.
Are you
Country Notre Dame.
No, listen to me. Can you stand in front or sit in front of drapes or curtains, anything like that?
This sound is what he's saying. You're probably close to that wall and it's echoing.
Ah.
You got a hard time.
Here, wait. Give me 1 second.
Sure.
Take your time.
I'm accustomed to this. That room echo can be defeated by drapes.
Yeah. This is the making of the Grand Opera.
He's lowering the blinds. That'll help.
Everyone gets to see what it looks like.
1 sec. Dining room table is covered in stuff that I am about to pack up in boxes
You're good, Sam.
John, my wife had her high school reunion this weekend, and so I do TV, and people are like, oh, I saw you on whatever, Fox or CNN, and they don't ask me about the work. They ask me about what it takes to do a TV hit from your home, and this is what it looks like.
Right.
Like, everyone's like, so what room do you do it? How do you set up? How do you? I'm like, it's just weird, and this is what the people are interested in, so you're showing them right now.
Okay, wait, do that.
Sam, you're probably overproducing, Sam.
But we appreciate the effort.
Okay.
It actually does sound better.
Does it look okay? I don't want to get glare.
It's not the look, it's the sound. Count to 10 for me.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
It's acceptable. I mean, given you're on AirPods, what I want to do is go immediately to the 40% that Hamas controls, the Board of Peace, and to check in 9 minutes to check in on Hamas. That's what we're doing here. Given that, to my knowledge, Bill, Tehran has not attempted to tie the success in Switzerland to Hamas. Have you heard anything?
Yeah, it's funny. This was a question I was going to ask. Like, I'm actually surprised that this one isn't tied.
Have you heard anything, Sam, about them, their linkage between Tehran and Hamas?
Yeah.
There's a pretty good theory that I totally buy as to why there isn't.
All right,
why Iran hasn't made this a priority.
I'll start with that right away. Here we go. 5. 4. This is the making of the show to become the show itself. For 2 years we had nothing. Hamas every day. They've even got Bill the Lebanon Health Ministry now. The Gaza Health Ministry has disappeared.
Well, they all moved to Lebanon and made that Lebanon Health Ministry.
There you go.
I know the Health Ministry is a traveling circus.
Yeah. They probably joined up with the flotilla people and it's got a whole thing going on.
That wound up to be a great segment with Hussein. You guys are good. All right.
Yeah, see,
here's Sam.
So good to have him back.
Here's Sam. 5, 4, 3, 2. Not yet. 1. I'm John Batchelor, Bill Raggio, Senior Fellow, Foundation for Defense of Democracy, my colleague and co-host, and we're very pleased to welcome our colleague Sam Benner of the FDD, assigned to Hamas, especially the Board of Peace, Gaza, what became of. And a puzzle emerges with the conflicting headlines in Europe of progress or walking out from the conversation between Tehran and Washington over the Strait of Hormuz, over the suspect nuclear weapons program, over the missile arsenal, over the depredations of the region by surrogate forces such as Hamas. Therein lies the puzzle. Sam, a good day to you. The linkage between Tehran and Hezbollah in Lebanon is obvious. In fact, the peace talks, so-called, have been interrupted more than once because of that linkage. However, I have not heard, in the course of these days of maneuvering to get the mediators into Switzerland rooms together, I have not heard Tehran linked to Hamas, which was all the excitement for 2 years. Now Hamas, which exists, which dominates with murder and mayhem, 40% of Gaza, and has interlocutors, I believe in Cairo, perhaps in Doha as well. Where are they in the Tehran negotiations? Good day to you, Sam.
Morning. Thanks for having me back. So the reason that Hamas is not being given the same sort of treatment that Lebanon is by the Iranians, which is if Israel launches a retaliatory strike after Lebanon breaks the current ceasefire, Iran will rush their defense and threaten to blow up the deal. But Hamas isn't getting that treatment. And you can tie it back to the start of the 12-day war and then later the U.S.-Israel joint operations inside of Iran. Hamas was caught in between sort of a rock and a hard place where their primary backers, Iran, were launching rockets at their second primary backers, Qatar, where Hamas leadership lives. Now, they didn't issue a strong public statement one way or the other, and that angered both Qatar and Iran when Iran was launching rockets at Qatari gas facilities. The Qataris wanted Hamas to say, this is not acceptable. We're hosting your political leadership over here, and you have to say something about how wrong it is for Iran to be launching these rockets at us, or we might kick you out. And they did something sort of in the middle, which angered both sides. So that could be a reason that led to sort of the breakdown of relations, at least in the short term, between Iran and Hamas, because they issued a statement that, you know, did not support Iran strikes, which is what they wanted to see, because they basically built Hamas into what it is today. And they expected Hamas to say, yes, this is totally justified and an acceptable form of resistance against American-Israeli oppression. So that's why they've been sidelined. Whereas Lebanon responded, in Iran's point of view, the correct way by launching a ton of rockets and drones at Israel.
Bill, you have a question for Sam.
So, Sam, has this created a conflict between Hamas and Iran? Is Hamas angry that it's not getting the red carpeted Hezbollah treatment?
I haven't seen anything to suggest that they're in contact anymore. I'm sure behind the scenes there is a good deal of resentment. There's also, I think, a sense from, you know, both sides that they kind of drag each other into the current predicament that they both find themselves in, where Hamas helped draw up and ideate the plan of October 7th and likely gave the green light for that attack in the end. And then because of that, Iran has faced the most devastating military campaign against it in modern history. So I think there's no love lost between the two. But, you know, all of their dealings were under the table anyway, so it's a little difficult to assess. It's not like they're state media sources are reporting on this consistently.
My memory is that Hamas's money is Qatari, not Iran. Iran might direct some funds now and again. Iran might talk the game, but it was always Qatar, which is a country that's completely unreliable. I'm told that it plays all sides against itself and then writes a big check. Is that what's going on now? Is Hamas in conversation with Doha, not Tehran?
I don't think they were ever not in conversation with Doha. They had a little falling out because of what I mentioned before with the rockets, but the political leadership of Hamas still resides in Qatar. Now, another country you have to mention here is Turkey. Over the last week or so, Israel eliminated two terror operatives who ran a money laundering network, you know, from Turkey, although they were in Gaza at that time. And they also, the IDF identified a five-person network of a similar, you know, funding ring that actually operates in Turkey. But of course, you can't strike Turkey if you're Israel. So it's Turkey and Qatar who have been funding Hamas basically the entire time, while also playing a very active role in any Middle East peace deal, which seems a little counterintuitive if they are, in fact, providing safe haven for and funding the terrorists that they claim that they're trying to disarm. But perhaps that's why the talks haven't gone well.
Bill, you have a question for Sam.
John, one of the sticking points for the moving forward in with the peace in Gaza, with the Board of Peace, is Hamas's ability to disarm or willingness to disarm. Has there been any progress been made on that front?
Sam?
So, there were recently some talks in the EU about this between Qatar, Turkey, and Egypt, among others. And they, while they cited progress, it's the sort of thing, we had some nice conversations. But, you know, this one thing came up and it was disarmament, and then the talks stalled, which has been the pattern for basically any talks since the October ceasefire in Gaza started. So, of course, nothing has changed since, you know, the beginning of Hamas as an organization. They're not going to willingly give up their arms. And the deal relies on a disarmed Hamas to implement all of these other lofty goals, like the International Stabilization Force or a domestic moderate-ish Palestinian government to administer the Gaza Strip. But all of these are predicated on Hamas no longer having weapons and therefore no longer being able to disrupt these efforts that, you know, some people might want to do if Hamas is not there to blow them up.
Hamas right now is an unknown to me as a strike force. Is it capable of launching offensive weapons? Does it have rockets anywhere?
It probably has a couple dozen, maybe 100 or so short-range rockets still left. That's much less from the thousands that it had before the war, most of which have been blown up by Israel. They don't have the capability to make new rockets at this point, although they're trying to reconstitute that ability so that they can continue to launch rockets against Israel. But right now, that's not where the issue is. That's not where Hamas is a danger. It's not from the rocket attacks. A lot of the prongs of this deal rely upon people going physically inside the Gaza Strip, whether that be a Palestinian police force, the International Stabilization Force, or the NCAG, which is the Palestinian Governance Board. Hamas can't really get to you at this point if you're outside of the Gaza Strip, but if you're in the area of the Gaza Strip that is not administered to by Israel, that is where Hamas can get you because they have manpower there, enough small arms, rocket launchers, IEDs, and you know, information to do what they've been doing, which is tracking down people they perceive as dissidents and taking them into the street and shooting them, which has been a constant feature of life in Gaza since the war started and has not stopped now.
And so Hamas has a reign of terror in the 40% of Gaza it controls, and that is the status quo. Is that what you just said?
Yes.
Sam Benner for the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. He's a research fellow. Bill Raggio, senior fellow, Foundation for Defense of Democracies. Hamas, once the front page, now no longer. I'm John Batchelor. That's strange. Sam, could the IDF wipe them out if it chose to?
Yeah, they could have done that at any point.
So they want them to be there. Why?
No, they don't. They just don't want to kill all the civilians, and then they're back in the news.
This is the problem, John. Like, fighting to not win wars. Half measures cause these problems. It's what we experienced in Iraq and Afghanistan. We don't have the will to finish them. The problem is that they have to get ugly to do it. Historically, that's how wars are won. But when you try to be humane, you actually extend conflicts.
I heard this morning a very smart remark from Jerusalem via London that no more, never again say finish the job because we can't.
Yeah. Depressing, but yeah, probably.
And that would be the explanation for Gaza. We can't finish the job. So yeah. Why do you begin it?
Well, they won't. I would say won't, John. You know,
they can't.
One of the things I always heard is
since 45, where
right.
did we finish the job?
But so, you know, people would constantly say, you can't bomb your, sure you can bomb your way to victory. You can't kill your, sure you could kill your way to victory. How many people are you willing to kill in these conflicts? And the answer is we're not willing to kill enough. It's unfortunate, but this is the calculus of war. I sound like a monster saying those things.
No,
you don't win wars
no,
by being right.
No, Bill, that is the way we conducted the war in Europe in the 40s. The number of Italian civilians who were massacred by competing enemy fire all the way up the peninsula is in the tens of thousands.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
But my case, my observation is we can't finish the job. No matter how many you kill, you haven't finished it.
I just would argue we haven't killed enough.
The job is different. Right?
There is a breaking point when populations stop supporting. We haven't done enough. Not we, the Israelis, or us. We just, you know, it's unfortunate, but like that's.
But we have been able to win wars, just not in the Middle East, not against like people
who
are.
We've won a war since World War II, and I don't count Grenada.
You should count Panama. I think you should probably count Venezuela.
I don't count those. Those weren't even.
We won the war in like a week in Panama. It was 3 weeks. Yeah. Sorry, we replaced Noriega and now they're one of our strongest allies.
We won the war in Grenada or Panama. I think that, you know, then we
should be able to win the war against Iraq or something like that, right?
Did we win the war?
No, we should be able to. And the reason that we can is because these people are nuts. And most other people in the rest of the world aren't nearly as nuts as these guys.
I didn't use win the war. I used finish the job. That's the metaphor we're to avoid.
Right. But the job is much bigger if the entire society is willing to, like, sacrifice themselves losing.
The warning is this, Sam. When somebody says, let's finish the job, you know that it's not going to happen. That's the warning here.
Look, and I'm going to use experience in Iraq.
We have one
minute,
Bill.
There was a lot of Iraqis willing to fight al-Qaeda in Iraq. They were on our side. I watched them. I embedded with Iraqi units in Mosul, in Ramadi, in Fallujah, in Baghdad. You know, throughout the country, they were willing to fight al-Qaeda. But we pulled the plug on those conflicts too soon.
Mm-hmm.
And that's an issue of will, not capability, but will.
But you would agree that I think the Middle East, especially, the will that you need to actually finish the job is much higher
Absolutely.
Than in other countries.
But I would just, my point is it's not impossible.
No, it's not. But that's why we can't do it in the Middle East, because you're right, because we don't have the will.
Because
to
we
that
won't
extent.
Do it. It's not that we can't.
Yes,
I would say
exactly.
We can. We
Easily.
Won't.
Yes, Bill, I think it would be easy. But
Bill, 14th century BCE. The Pharaoh versus the King of Kings of the Hittites.
That's old school, John. I love it.
Okay. There never was a winner. All they did was trade sub-kings back and forth. One of those sub-kings was Jerusalem.
And that's because they make it cut deals, and I got like 8 tons of gold. And
that's right.
You know, some of that stuff, you know, you read the history of that stuff.
I'm suspecting it's in our DNA not to finish the job.
Yeah. We did in World War II. We're capable of it.
The metaphor that I enjoy the most that the Israelis have used these years is mowing the lawn.
Yeah.
So the question becomes, has the U.S. entered into the lawnmower?
Oh, just remember, John, that was a phrase they used in Afghanistan in the early 2000s.
Yeah, it's a phrase of frustration and significant acceptance that you can't win. Mowing the
they
lawn.
They said it like it was a good thing, and I explained to them that it was a bad thing.
Well, but it's used routinely. In Gaza.
And by the way, I was called being critical and hateful of the military for correcting them.
Bill, we don't want to relive your medals of honor here, all right? Fine. Because you tell the truth, you get pushed around, Bill, okay?
Yeah.
Are we talking MOU also? Or because if not, I should get to work, probably.
We're going to finish and say goodbye to you. And thank you, Sam, for coming in late. I'm going to have to overpay the orchestra now because I've kept them too long. So, gentlemen,
no problem.
You all, Sam.
Thank
yeah,
you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Good day.
Good one.
John, 9:30?
Yes, Bill, 9:30.
All right, I'll catch you shortly.
See ya.